From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines, followed by some ghosts. Here's what's happening. The United States Capitol was locked down Friday due to an exterior security threat after a car rammed into a barrier on the Senate side of the complex. One officer died in that mishap. Another was injured, according to the United States Capitol Police, who said the suspect was killed by police after he exited his sedan and then attacked them with a knife. My gosh. A Taiwan Express train with almost 500 people aboard derailed in a tunnel after hitting a truck that had slid down a bank onto the track, killing at least 50 passengers, injuring 146 others in the island's worst rail disaster in seven decades there. The CDC has updated its travel guidance, saying fully vaccinated travelers are less likely to get and spread COVID-19. The agency did say that if a destination requires testing, however, fully vaccinated travelers would still need to adhere to the destination's requirements there. Well, during the coronavirus pandemic, food delivery apps used has just skyrocketed, as have weight gains. Advocacy groups say that these two things are really correlated. Third-party food delivery companies like DoorDash and Uber Eats are not required by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to display calories and nutritional information on online menus for foods from chain restaurants because of a legal loophole there. So people are gaining weight during the COVID pandemic. Let's check in with our food safety coach, Jeff Nelkin. Jeff, this is a problem, isn't it?
Yes, George. You know, they were calculating that during the pandemic, people were gaining about two pounds a month.
That's well, and considering this thing's well over a year, that's about 25 pounds.
Right. So you see, you know, you can see some major changes, and we need to be aware that, you know, we've gotten used to watching TV and just, you know, being over relaxed and eating, and, you know, things have been too easy, and we've not paying attention to our exercising program. So, you know, we're putting in and we're not putting out.
What does our food safety coach recommend?
Well, we need to pay attention to, you know, what we're, you know, ordering in the way of food, because if you're, you know, if you're figuring that you're going, you know who you're ordering from, you need to look at their nutritional analysis on the foods if you're concerned about the calories and fat that you're taking in and you're gaining weight. Then, you know, you need to kind of counterbalance that and, you know, start eating more natural foods and foods that contain, you know, less fat and ingredients that, you know, contribute to, you know, obesity.
Good tips from Jeff Nelkin. His website is foodsafetycoach.com. Thank you, Jeffrey. Well, the National Association of Postal Supervisors, which represents 27,000 active and retired Postal Service workers, was informed that reductions in force or layoffs may be forthcoming, depending on how the next phase of the agency's structure and staffing plan takes shape next month. Wow, how about that? Job growth, though, boomed in March in the United States at the fastest pace since last summer, as stronger economic growth and aggressive vaccination efforts contributed to a surge in hospitality and construction jobs, according to the Labor Department. Well, it's time for Kevin Randall to talk about UFOs, the retired Army Lieutenant Colonel. Kevin, what do you have for us this week, my friend?
Hi, George. How you doing?
Okay.
First, I got some distressing news. Kelvin Parker, he of the Hicks and Parker Pascagoula abduction
case,
he's seriously ill.
Oh, geez.
He'll be undergoing surgery soon, and I have information about this at my blog if for those who are interested, like to help him out.
Okay,
somewhere.
We'll give that blog for folks when you're right ready to wrap up, Kev.
Okay, thank you. On a happier note, I have seen many reports from sincere people who talk of seeing lights in the night sky. Alan Hynek called these nocturnal lights. I did my PhD dissertation on the influence of belief structure on the identification of ambiguous stimuli, which is how you have to word these things for a PhD. I found that those who saw these nocturnal lights would identify them as spacecraft if they were interested in UFOs, but some would identify the lights as ghosts if they were interested in the paranormal, and angels if they were religious. So So we need more information than a light in the night sky moving around to figure out what's going on. As an example, I have seen a number of reports about a string of lights seen crossing the sky. One of those was from Indiana on March 21st of this year, and another from England on March 22nd. When corrected for the time zone differences, it seems clear that both sightings were the Starlink communication satellites. And there are other sightings that have that same solution but on different dates. From Denver on March 1st of this year, the witness reported beautiful lights in the southwestern sky. The witness looked out the window at the lights at about 12:15 a.m. and saw two points of light that were as bright as the stars. The witness said the lights did not move in any conventional way. These weren't helicopters because there was no sound. The sighting lasted for about 5 minutes. Here was an interesting sighting, but there isn't much we can do with it. There were no other known witnesses. There are no photographs and no real details. The case is a classic nocturnal light. What we need are sightings with more details. For example, I have found a sighting at www.ufosnw.com made by a sailor in April of 1996. His ship was near New Zealand at about 1 in the morning. They picked up on radar a signal that, according to him, tracked an object at something like Mach 15 or about 15,000 miles an hour. This, the world speed record for this, for that sort of thing, is a NASA craft at Mach 9.6
wow.
or about 7,000 miles an hour.
This thing doubled it. Jeez.
Oh, yeah, it was moving. He noted the radar picked it up as an IFF, as a foe, and the ship went to general quarters. This was during a war game, so the whole ship was now awake at 1 a.m. The crew assembled. The ship went dead in the water. The main engine's down, but the emergency generator kicked in. It took the engineers about 5 minutes to restore the main power. The crew reported that a light skimmed across the horizon from the bow of the ship to the stern. It was when the light flared that the ship went dead. The sailor reported that prior to losing power, what he called the radio central picked up an unidentified high-frequency signal with people talking in the background, but they couldn't understand them. This lasted for 2 minutes, and then it went silent. When the power was restored, the radar signal was gone, and the communication was gone as well. This then was a nocturnal light with multiple witnesses and an interaction with the environment. There is something we can do to investigate the case that makes it different from those others I just talked about. And that kind of wraps up where we are for tonight, George.
All right, Kevin, thank you. It's always good talking to you. Now, give us your blog, would you?
It's www.kevinrandall.blogspot.com, and just there's a search engine on it. Just click in Calvin Parker, and it'll take you to the story specifically about him.
Super. Thank you. And our prayers go out to Calvin, of course. In a moment, we're going to talk about the paranormal. Cage Rick Olson joins us. His book, Runes for Transformation. Get ready to dabble with the paranormal next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Great to spend a Friday night with you. From early childhood and throughout his life, Cage Rick Olson has led a paranormal life that began with seances at a very early age and led to a lifetime of esoteric study and occult practice, specializing in runes and Norse mysticism. Now his clients and students learn to resolve paranormal issues, clear those shadows, and discover their own sacred path in life. He has appeared on Beyond Belief with me as a very special guest. Cadric, welcome to the program.
Hey, George, I'm really excited and happy to be here. Thank you for having me on.
I promise we'd do it, and here you are.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So let's go back to the childhood days. How did all this paranormal activity start for you?
I grew up in a house that was extremely haunted. You could set something down on the bed, turn around, go back to pick it up. It was gone.
Oh, geez.
Be in the bathtub as a kid, and you'd hear footsteps going up and down the hallway, but my parents weren't the ones doing it. You could be upstairs, you'd hear a toilet flush downstairs, or there was my favorite thing. We had the TVs, you know, where they had the old dials on it, where you had to change the channels.
Click, click, click.
Click, 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 exactly. Well, you'd be sitting there watching TV from across the room, and you could literally see the dial turning.
Whoa.
To change the channel while you're watching TV.
Now, were your parents aware of what all was going on there?
Oh, yeah. They were aware of it. They made me aware of it. And so to help deal with that, we went to a special church. It's a spiritualist church. It's a lot like your typical Protestant church, you know, where you have your stand-up, sit-down, stand-up, sing, sit-down.
Yeah, like a Catholic mass, too.
Yeah, exactly. Only this ended with mediums going up on stage at the end of it and doing trans-channeling work where the spirits would come through the mediums. And then every Saturday night in the basement of the church, they would hold a seance. So I grew up learning how to work with spirits, communicate with spirits, and deal with them from a very early age and throughout my life. I thought everybody did that because that was so normal for me.
Did you ever find out what was going on at the house, whether people died there or whatever?
Yeah, my parents built their house in a neighborhood that was old farmland. And this was part of old dairy farm territory. So where the house had built, there had been, you know, different people who lived there who were working on the farm. And it was like the old farmer's boots that you could hear going through the house. It was just, you know, the people who used to live on the property when it was a farm, kind of exploring what it, like, what are these people doing here? This isn't farmhouse. This isn't the place where the cows. What do we do here? So they're mostly confused with suburban life.
Is it possible that the house was built on top of a graveyard on that farm?
It's possible, but I don't see that we had any plottings like that. I'm more inclined to think it was just where people used to live and they died, and they're kind of going about their daily life that way.
Did you ever get harmed or, you know, did they try to scare you?
Yeah, this is a weird thing about that neighborhood, is it is full of shadow people. Lots of shadow people. And even people who don't believe in ghosts, when they come to pay us a visit, they'll be driving down the street and they're like, I was coming down your block and I turned the corner and I swear I saw somebody standing there at the side of the street about ready to walk in the street.
Oh, boy.
And I go to look and they're gone. And I'm like, does it look like you're a shadow? And they're like, yeah, they're like a shadow person. Now, right off the bat, that's probably scaring the heck out of a lot of people. And it did when I was a kid because I could not go to sleep unless I had a TV on to cause electromagnetic interference in the room because they were just pestering me all night long when I was sleeping, and that scared the heck out of me. But over the years, learning how to deal with it, learning how to set up protection, learning what the negative stuff was and the bad stuff was, I came to realize that these shadow people really weren't the scary things. There was a scary place, though. But it had nothing to do with the shadow people, and it had nothing to do with the house other than what I believed from watching TV shows and horror movies and kind of getting into, oh, these are all the scary things.
Yeah.
I got through that.
Were there demons that ever chased you around?
The only time that there could have been potentially a demon, but I don't think it was, when I was a teenager, my friends and I would go play out in a field near our house, Stonehawker Park, it was called. And as we were out there late one night, moon was shining bright, we were just being dumb teenagers, all of a sudden there was like this dark force that came down on us, like this dark sense of fear. We all felt it. We got up and we just started running back to our house. We didn't know what it was, but it was just like this horrible, awful fear of dread. We couldn't handle it. We got back. As soon as we crossed over the railroad tracks back into our neighborhood, I called in for my guides, for protection, for beings to help us out.
Yeah.
And I was actually able to see, like, this dark horde of beings, shadow people maybe, that were on the other side of the tracks being held off by lighter-type entities, keeping them at bay, holding them back. And that was like one of my only experiences with potentially negative forces. But I'm like 49 years old. I grew up with this. I have never encountered anything ever that would be classified classically as a demon.
Well,
that was like the worst.
You did a great job on Beyond Belief, and obviously you have learned a lot about the paranormal. Had you had any special training, or Kedrick, have you had a mentor who helped you along?
I wish I could say that I did in life, a human person, but I didn't. I remember being a little kid, maybe first or second grade, playing on the playground. And you know how we all have our imaginary friends that we play games with? My imaginary friends were telling me about multiple layers of reality and how to connect with different kind of beings and different states of existence, stuff that, you know, a first or second grader wouldn't be dealing with, and we certainly weren't playing. But they taught me over the years how to set up certain boundaries, how to set up barriers, how to do different levels of communication, and how to touch base with what needed to happen. Like I told you, I couldn't go to sleep without the TV for the longest time until they eventually showed me how to set up protective barriers in the room, how to set a boundary and say, no, you cannot cross this boundary, or only at these certain times and these certain ways can we do that. Now, while I've not had a physical person teach me this stuff, I've seen, of course, we had the seances in the church and the trance channeling.
Sure.
That was there. But I've never had a physical person teaching me seance in this way or communication or boundaries until I read the work of Allan Kardec, his Book of Mediums. And that was like a revelation to me. I'm like, wow, there's somebody else here that can relate to the same experiences I've had, who can understand what I grew up with, and my own connection with the paranormal. So it's kind of self-taught and self-producing work out there that has been extremely beneficial to people. But no mentor.
How often are you dabbling with the paranormal?
That's a fun question, George. Here's my answer to that when it comes to occult and the paranormal stuff. Never dabble, ever. Either you go in both feet full on so that it becomes a lifestyle for you or and a commitment, or you stay out of it. Because it will change the way you see reality. It will change the way you interact with everything around you. And if you're not ready to make the paranormal a permanent part of your normal life, then don't dabble. You got to go in fully respecting it, fully understanding that this is the way the natural world is, and that you're tuning yourself into it, you're opening that up and accepting it as a part of reality.
What do you think the paranormal is, Kadrick? I mean, where does it exist? What is it?
Ooh, let's go deep on this one.
All right.
In the Kabbalistic traditions, we have something called Ein Sof. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly. This is the great infinite nothingness that has infinite potential. In the Norse tradition, where I come from, we call it Ginnunga Gap. In other traditions, like the Greco-Roman, it would be chaos. There's this great nothingness. Now, think of this as the darkness between stars. This is the ether of the universe. That ether of the universe can condense into consciousness and awareness. That conscious awareness can then condense into a subtle form of energy that we consider to be the spiritual realms and the spiritual reality. That subtle energy can then further condense into electromagnetic light and the forces that we see in our world, which can then further condense into matter and form. And so the paranormal is that subtle layer of energy that hasn't quite condensed into electromagnetic energy. It's still like virtual energy. It's still a very different frequency of energy, but it allows life to exist. It allows consciousness to have a coherent, cohesive form that can connect with other forms of consciousness and even get dense enough to manipulate physical matter in a way that seems invisible to our eye.
It's amazing that it's happening. And it was always part of the universe, wasn't it?
Always. It's a completely natural part of our life.
We hear words about the veil, the other side. What does that mean?
Wow, this is where I'm going to have some conflicts with maybe some other psychics and other people who lead seances and that sort of thing. Because you're right, we hear at 3 o'clock in the morning, the veil's the thinnest. Or at midnight, the veil's thinner. You go into a graveyard, the veil between the worlds is thin there. Or certain times of the year, like Halloween, Samhain. But that's not true. That's not my experience. There is no veil. Absolutely never was. What the veil is a metaphor for our consciousness being able to tune in or tune out to our paranormal awareness. So we say the veil is thinnest when we're allowing our mind to be open and receptive to the subtle energies and the subtle beings around us. And we say the veil is closed or thickest when we are tuning our minds out of the paranormal awareness.
Kedrick, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back and chat more with you about the paranormal. Kedrick's website is his first name, KAEDRICH.com, linked up to coasttocoastam.com. We're talking about the paranormal tonight with Kedrick Olson. We're going to take your calls next hour with Kedrick about the paranormal, but he'll also talk about your dearly departed. And as we get closer to the end of this hour, I'll have Kedrick tell you exactly what he needs from you, if that's going to be your question. So you get ready for that. Tim Banal is our news editor of Coast to Coast AM, and he puts out what is in Coast You Missed It, some great stories that you'll find on our highlight reel. Tim, what do you have for us this week?
Hey, George, good to talk to you again.
You too.
Now, you remember a few years ago when creepy clowns were all the rage? They were popping up all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we've got a new version of that phenomenon. It might be even a little creepier than that. So over in Scotland, this started about a couple of weeks ago, people started spotting a plague doctor, someone dressed as a plague doctor roaming around a town. Now, this particular plague doctor, the cops caught up with him. It was a mischievous young man. They said, you know, it's not illegal what you're doing, young man, but please stop doing this because you're scaring people. Well, lo and behold, that reign of terror may have come to an end, but it unleashed this wave of plague doctors that have spread out across the United Kingdom. And in the last week, folks can catch up with this in the number two spot at the Coast to Coast AM carousel. There are at least four or five instances of these plague doctors being spotted throughout England in way far away different parts of the country, 300 miles away from a different place, 200 miles away. So it's this phenomenon. And it's also back in Scotland as well. A whole bunch of other towns now are seeing the plague doctors. So it's, I guess you kind of call this a public service message to the Coast listeners. If you're in England, the UK, keep an eye out for plague doctors. If you see one, take a picture and send it to us. We'll run it on the Coast website.
And then run.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. This next story, perfect timing here for Easter weekend. This is amazing, and folks can see this at the Coast to Coast AM website in the number one spot. There's this breed of rabbit. It was first discovered in France in the 1930s, and scientists up until now had no idea why this was the case. It's a rabbit. It cannot hop, and instead, when it needs to flee from the area, it jumps up on its two front feet and walks along the ground. It's really, really amazing. I own a rabbit. I've had a rabbit for the last 10 years. Sir Ralphus is his name. And he's never done anything like this, and I was astounded when I saw this video. So geneticists, this is a remarkable case of how science can solve these long-standing mysteries. So geneticists bred one of these rabbits with a more normal rabbit and were able to, over the course of looking at the genetics of these rabbits, figured out that they are missing a gene that it disrupts their musculature, if you will, disrupts how they would jump, and I guess you could say they are mutant rabbits, right?
That's right.
So because of this, nature adapts, and the rabbit walks on its two front feet. So it's really, really an amazing, amazing video. Folks could check that out in the number one spot at the Coast to Coast AM website. And have a happy Easter.
You too, Tim. Always fun talking to you. And as he said, it's at coasttocoastam.com in our highlight reel. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Kedrick Olson with us. Kedrick, what in your opinion is evil?
Ah, this is where I'm going to refer back to Norse lore. One of my favorite lines from a poem called The Havamal says that no man is so evil as to not have a little bit of good, and no man is so good as to not have a little bit of evil. A little bit related to, like, the Tao. Now, my second favorite definition of evil comes to us from Doctor who says we can define evil by what side of the fork you're on.
Oh, really? Interesting. Well, thank God it didn't come from Dr. Seuss, right?
Exactly. And what's meant by that is a lot of times when I'm working with somebody that has something bad in the house, it's causing the typical paranormal problems that we have. They get the creepy feelings, there may be the bad smell, there's the cold spot. And a lot of our training says, well, there's a demon in the house, I need an exorcism, let's get this out of here. And I'll go into the house, I'll do the exploring, I'll work with the people in the house, and I'll find out, wait a minute. No, it's really not. What it is it's a bottom feeder. It's a low-level energy sucker, for want of a better word. Think of it as a thought form.
Like a psychic vampire?
Not quite a psychic vampire. It's more like just a ball of energy. Let's say it's a fear energy that subsists off of fear. And it's got enough wherewithal that when you're in a room alone and susceptible, it's feeling a little bit hungry, and it's going to poke you with a little bit of fear energy. And then you're going to go through that whole experience of you're going to feel energy drawn off of you. So you're going to have the cold spot. You're going to have that fear feeling, and you're going to have that feeling that there's something in the room with you that you can't quite see. You can't quite place it. So you're now running with fear. You are exuding the exact energy that this thought form needs you to produce. And so it's eating that fear energy that you're creating. It's not evil, because it's just like a rabbit would call a fox evil because the fox eats the rabbit. But it's just this little ball of energy trying to subsist on whatever it knows how to feed off of, and you just happen to be a good target. So I teach people how to recognize when they're being fed off of by a thought form or other kind of entities and switch it around so that it no longer bothers them. And I wouldn't say it's quite evil, but now evil could be like a human thing, you know, when we do horrible things to each other and we just keep writing this awful stuff that we do. That can create a more powerful paranormal entity that lives off of the suffering and the torment, and it will cause mass swaths of people to do really awful things to each other for really stupid reasons. And that could be possibly evil, because it affects so many people and gets many people to do really terrible things.
Kedrick, your book is called Runes for Transformation. What are runes?
Runes. This comes back to the Norse mythos. At the very simplest, runes are the written form of the Proto-Norse and the Old Norse languages. But every letter not only has a phonetic value like the letter A and the letter B in English do, but every rune also has a meaning to it, such as the rune Fehu that starts off everything. Looks like the letter F, has the sound of F, but in the old times it meant cattle, and it deals with transferable wealth and assets, money that you can move back and forth. It eventually became the word fey, which became the word fee. So at the simplest, the runes are little characters that can tune us into these values that the Old Norse people had that were still part of our values, like wealth and strength and aggression and communication. But even more so, they are the subtle vibrations. Remember how we talked way back at the beginning of the conversation about the darkness that can condense into consciousness, that can condense into subtle energy? Runes exist within that place before the subtle energies, the vibration that exists at that consciousness level. So they are the universal mysteries that can connect the subtle layers of consciousness with the subtle layers of reality, so we can cause change in accordance to will.
Hey, Kedrick, you deal with a lot of people who have paranormal issues. What are some of the issues that they come to you for?
Quite often it's attachments. And an attachment is, let's say, a paranormal investigator goes into a house where there's some bad juju stuff going on, and then they come out of it, and they're feeling like there's just like this awful feeling going on. They have this sense of depression that they can't seem to shake. They've got these obsessive thoughts going over and over and over into their mind, and they can't seem to shake these obsessive thoughts. And so we'll work together to realize that, when you were in this place, you didn't set up the protection that you needed to. You accidentally got a spirit latched onto you that is kind of living some of these awful feelings and having these awful thoughts and trying to get you to recreate those for it. And so we'll work together to detach that spirit and send it back where it needs to go. If it's in the house, it's usually somebody who's curious and wandering around. And more often than not, bad stuff doesn't really live in houses. We create it. And so I'll get people to work with the spirit that's in their house so that they can peacefully coexist with the spirit so that they aren't dealing with any of the bad, negative side of things.
What percent of people want to live with a spirit? in your opinion?
Oh, I have no idea. I would say it would be great if we had 100% because they're all around us all the time. But I think if we're practical and realistic, it's a very few, but I think that number should be increasing. I don't have a way of quantifying it.
Do you deal at all, Kedrick, with the angelic realm?
Yes. And they come in many different flavors and many different forms. These are what I would consider ascended masters or ascended beings. In the Norse tradition, we call them the Alfar or the Disir. They are human beings or other form of entities that are having this exalted state of existence where they exist in a place where there's no time or location, and they have this higher form of understanding and wisdom and guidance that can help us in our lives and help really clear out a lot of the negativity and put us into a better place.
Do you ever get exhausted doing what you're doing? Because it really had an effect on Edgar Cayce, for example. It wore him down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are definitely some times where, and I think anybody who's in this field, self-care needs to be a priority because, you know, working day in, day out with people who are dealing with some negative issues, some problems, and I'm in the pit with that, which is where I want to be. I want to be helping people who are dealing with paranormal issues and problems and the negativity. So it can definitely be wearing on me. And I will take the time to boost myself up. I'll go hang out with my friends, with the people that I want to be with my girlfriend, and hang out in my life to boost my energy back up into a higher state so that I can be in a better place.
Tell me how you deal with the other side. The dead.
We talk. That's the best way to do it. Is you would, if you knew there was a spirit in the room with you right now, I would say you would talk to them as if they were a living person, treat them with the same level of dignity and respect that you would treat a regular person. In fact, a lot of the times when bad stuff is going on in the house and it's a person-generated issue instead of a spirit-generated issue, I will have the people shift their attitude from, oh my God, who are you? What are you going to do to me? To, oh, you're another person. You're here. Do you need help? How can I help you?
Mm-hmm. They all need help, don't they?
Yeah, a lot of them do. And that shift in attitude makes the bad stuff stop. It changes the energy. It changes the relationship. It adds respect and dignity back into the interaction. And it makes the whole interaction so much better.
Do they come to you, the other side, or do you go to them?
Oh, all the time. We're all together. So, for example, I'm in my office here. This place is full of spirits all the time. When I do my little one-off seances by myself, spirits will pop in all the time asking for help. They're getting lost. They need help crossing over. I recently did a seance with a room full of people. This is going to blow your mind, George. I had two brothers come in that fought in life and killed each other in seance, and when they were alive. And they came into seance to talk about it. We couldn't really figure out what the problem was to resolve, so we called in the angelic beings, the higher beings to come in, and they suggested, how about you boys reincarnate so you can solve your problems there? Why don't you become like fathers in life and reincarnate? 2 days later, I'm talking with somebody, and we get on the subject of past life reincarnation, and he goes, you know, I was talking to my friend the other day and how he was with his brother, and they realized that in a past life they were also brothers, and they fought, and they killed each other. And the details that this guy was telling me about his friend and his brother matched the details we got in seance.
Wow.
To the point I had to pick my jaw off the floor going, wow, thank you, Spirit, for that sign of the work that we did was valid.
Kedrick, when we take calls, obviously they can just ask you questions about the paranormal. But if they want questions about their dearly departed, their family members, their friends, what do you want them to ask you? How do you want them to ask that question?
Yeah, let's talk about who they are. Let's talk about their name, who they were in life to you, what they meant to you, and what sort of interaction you're trying to get. And, of course, it's never guaranteed. There are a lot of different possibilities that could be thrown out there. And I'll tell you, my greatest strength in working with spirits is not names, so I don't tend to pull names, but I work with messages, and I work with the conveyance of that information of where they are, what help they need, and what help they can provide. So we're going to focus more on that and less on the names.
And do you sometimes tell people, I can't connect?
Yes, that unfortunately does happen.
Right.
And when that happens, sometimes other spirits pop in, you know, like we're looking for father, but the uncle pops in or the grandmother pops in and says, hey, here's what's going on.
Have you connected with other beings from, let's say, other planetary systems or the spirit world from that realm?
Yeah, in fact, my favorites that I like to interact with, I call them the causal beings, because they exist in a different sense of time than we do, and they have explained time in a way that I would have never understood it before. As we experience time as linear, cause to effect, cause to effect, cause to effect, they experience time all at once as layers of possibility and probability, and that a moment is a living entity that gives birth to another living entity, which becomes the next moment that we are in existence to. And believe it or not, they're fascinated by us as human beings, not just because of our linear temporal existence, but because it is our observation of that moment collapses the layers of probability from possibility into actuality. And so to them, they can traverse time like we traverse space. And they're fascinated that we're kind of stuck in this linear concept of time. It's mind-blowing how they've restructured my understanding of time.
And back to these angels for a second. They're truly there to help us, aren't they?
Yeah, we all have this nice interconnection. And I don't know exactly why they're here to help us, but I know they're there. And you know,
and I'm glad they are. I'm glad they are, aren't you?
Yeah, it sounds fluffy to say we just reach out and ask for help. But they're there, and that's really what they do.
We're going to take calls next hour with Kadrick Olson. So as he mentioned, he'll need names of your dearly departed, and he'll ask you a question or two, and then we'll see if he can connect. And also, if you just have a general paranormal question, jump on board. Open lines later on tonight on Coast to Coast AM, so get ready for that too. George Norrie with you, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.